Patients expect the best outcome from their eye surgery. But what happens when the case isn't going as planned? Hear never-before-told stories from world-renowned eye surgeons about the most vulnerable moments of their careers. This is Ophthalmology Quicksand Chronicles with Drs. Nicole Fram and Elizabeth Yu, where we learn to pivot, reflect, and evolve as surgeons.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ophthalmology Quicksand Chronicles. We're your hosts, Nicole Fram.
Hi, and Elizabeth Yu.
And we just wanted to remind everybody that this is a podcast and a webcast, so you can listen to us on your favorite platform or watch us on YouTube. So, Liz.
Nicole.
You left a message. You left a message for me, and I didn't call you back because it was a crazy week. And I wanted to know what you were talking about.
Wait, Nicole. First of all, do you remember like when we, oh my gosh, okay, first episode maybe, which is what, it's like 2 months ago. It's not even that long ago. Where's my memory? And you're like, I'm going to channel my mom. How was your week? Or you know how you said it. Right, better than that. I apologize.
No, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I apologize. Okay, do you know I hear that in my head like every day now?
Right.
How is your week?
So, no, but really what she says is, hi, doll, how are you? Enough about you, let's talk about me.
I love her.
Yeah.
I love her. Oh, I love her. Now I'm going to hear that every morning too, yeah, on top and then one. Followed by how was your week? Okay. So, but that has like helped me change my whole perspective on things. So when I left your message on Monday, which I still want to get to because it's pretty amazing. It just shows you how amazing my day was. But so today, okay, long story, busy, whatever. I step in dog poop.
Oh, right?
No, nice. Not a big deal. I mean, it's my two puppies, right? Like it's nasty diarrhea dog poop, boop. And you would think that I'd be cursing up a storm and whatever. And I look down at my feet. I'm like, yes, my pant leg was spared. I am winning. Okay.
Absolutely.
Right. And then I'm like, I am running. And I am tired. But January 2021 is a third paycheck month. I am winning because like I hear to myself, a guardian angel is asking me, how was my week? I cannot like come back with it's poopy.
It's
me. It was actually. Okay. So Monday, this is what I had to say for everyone, including you. Girl, you're going to love this. Oh gosh. I'm trying not to say girl because I heard myself say girl a lot.
No, it's going to turn out to be a drinking game. So like every time you say girl, then someone has to drink.
Oh, we're going to be Hoda and Kathy Lee because we're going to drink too.
Yeah.
I'm making it happen as long as legit. Okay. So I, you know, like there's no greater feeling than doing cataract surgery on a really high myope because they're of all the patients, they're the ones because they've been so blind all their lives that you do one eye, you get that 9.5 diopteron and they're like, the world is amazing. And they're like floating. And they're the ones that ruin it for every other patient, right? So I had one of those. This gentleman got that 9.5 in. And those are the ones I like to go in the post-op area just to hear because it makes me feel better about me.
Right.
For my week.
Because it's all about you.
100%. Yeah. No, I'm just teasing. But it just so happened that I was able to go out to the post-op too, like specifically while he was coming out of ketamine, talk to him and see how he was feeling. And I'm standing at the edge of the bed, like the foot, and he's doing the wah moment. He's like, I'm like, Mr. So-and-so, how's it feeling? I hope you're feeling okay. You know, how's your vision? He's like, doc, I can see everything. He's like, I can see what it says on your shirt. It says Elizabeth. I'm like, yep. Elizabeth, yell you. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yes. Elizabeth, you are N. Yes. Yes, it is, sir.
You have arrived.
Yes. And that's when I texted you to be like, I've got the best story.
That's
and
amazing.
Honestly, that made me feel so good. I mean, you know, I don't know if he could really see anything or if he just remembered my name, you know, from prior, but just the fact that like he played along and it was just funny. And so that's my week.
That's awesome.
How was your week, doll?
Well, doll, my... So. Number one, let's just preface this by saying we love our nurses, and I learned everything from my nurses.
100%.
But yes, that's hilarious. And the fact that you just are numb to dog shit is also great, because when you have puppies, that's just the way you have to roll.
Yeah.
So my week started off a little rocky. So I was really excited because I got my second shot on the Pfizer for COVID-19 vaccine. And, you know, of course, doctors are the worst patients. So I thought, you know, I can work all day. And I did take off the next day, which was smart. But I only took one dose of Advil. And I was like, you know what? I'm good. I'll be fine. So I was fine. And then all of a sudden, 10 o'clock at night hits. And I am just like aching. I could feel every single joint in my body. So for everybody out there, just take your Advil, Tylenol, alternate. Because that next day can be really rough. So tell me, have you had your second shot yet? Or what's your story?
Were you hallucinating?
You know, I was kind of not, I was in a delirium. And I was just thinking about, you know, is this ever going to stop? And how badly I felt for people that have, you know, really had COVID and gone through this for weeks. Yeah.
Well, a patient told me today that she's had symptoms for over 6 months.
It's crazy.
I'm like, no.
It's crazy.
No. So you know that I don't know if this is true, but that if you've had COVID and then you get vaccinated, which I'm not sure why you would get vaccinated, suffice it to say that maybe because having COVID doesn't stop you from getting it again, but that if you've had COVID and you get vaccinated, you actually don't have like as severe of symptoms.
Yeah, because your immune system already recognizes it.
Eye-opening.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's, you know, that's my that's my contribution to today's podcast.
Well, speaking of eyes, do we have a guest today?
That's right. And, you know, we're very fortunate again. It's time to introduce our guest, who we love so much that we have invited her to come back for a second episode with us. And she so generously and graciously agreed to. Dr. Kathy McGabe. For those who don't know Kathy, I'll share a little bit about her amazing career and background. I've mentioned before, but she is an incredible mother of five. Dr. McCabe is the medical director of her clinical practice, the Eye Associates. She's also CMO of Eye Health America and the president of Outpatient Ophthalmology Surgery Society, better known as OOS.
OOS.
OOS. OOS. So welcome back.
Great to be here. Oh, I loved your stories too, from the poop to the prey. It was great. And I just want to say I might get a little free pass tonight because I actually got my second vaccination today. So I am definitely feeling like the aches in that arm. And
oh, no, you can't ache.
Half of my body.
Yeah, you can't ache till after we're done.
Oh, I can't. Sorry. Darn. Yeah. I started early.
No. Yeah, somebody get her some Advil stat.
I know. Excuse me.
Excuse me. I'll be right back. So, Kathy, we are so lucky to have Kathy Squared. And we get to continue the conversation. And just for all the viewers, we want to remind you that Quicksand Chronicles is about that moment in surgery where things are not going your way. And it's about the fight and how you come out of it. And this episode, Kathy, is going to be a little bit of a twist because it's going to be about how you innovated to make a really challenging procedure a little bit easier. So we're so excited to hear what you have to say.
Yep.
Kathy, now,
go ahead.
You go.
Okay. No, I just wanted to just quick anecdotally, do you remember trying to teach yourself certain things like Yamini technique or DMEC on my own? Like that's daunting. It's next level when then you try to create and innovate a whole new technique. So I want to hear from Kathy's perspective, if she can take us back to the beginning and tell us the story behind your specific innovation that you are going to help us all as anterior segment surgeons. I mean, I think that this is super special for a few different reasons. After you are out of training, right, you no longer have someone to help hold your hand through new techniques. And I remember teaching myself how to do a DMEC and how to do a Yamini nominee. And that is such a vulnerable feeling because you're basically just kind of relying on your skill set to know what to do next. And that's hard to do. But that's next level when you are also innovating and creating new techniques because of such moments. So Kathy, I'd love for you to take us back to the beginning and tell us a story behind this innovation.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it's a combination of issues, right? So I was learning Yamini technique myself, and there are some tricks and pearls and things like that. And one thing I found is that when you teach something, you really have to think about it more carefully. And so Steve Safran had asked me to help teach a wet lab at the cataract surgery, telling it like it is. And he actually had his own quicksand moment of teaching because all of the Lucia lenses had been used for a prior session. And so he was trying to figure out, you know, what are we going to do to teach that little bit of melting the end of the haptic? And he used 5-O-Prolene sections of suture. And so that's what we used to show the attendees, like, how to do that little mushroom on the end, the little flange. And so I kept thinking about that, going, you know what? I had no idea that 5-O-Prolene suture was a lot like a haptic. And isn't that cool that you can do that just with suture? Like, what else could you do with that? And so that was like February, whatever it was. And then as the couple months went by, I ended up having a couple of patients who had premium lenses that were dislocated in the bag. And I actually had two patients on the same day. One was a tetanus multifocal and one was a restore patient. And both of them wanted to keep their lenses. And I thought, you know what? I don't really know how I would keep this lens very easily. But, you know, I had this little thought in the back of my head that maybe that 5-O-Prolene will come in handy some way. So I had been thinking about that all along and decided that that was something I was going to try with those two patients to just kind of loop it around, creating flanges, but using it through the capsular bag. So hopefully avoiding a vitrectomy and avoiding an IOL exchange and all of the hassle that we all know comes with those things, and letting them keep their special lens that they had paid for. So it was two patients back to back, same day. And knowing that I wanted to do that, I did what we should do when we're doing a new technique, like what you were talking about. How do you do that, right? So I had an idea and I took little sections of 5-O-Prolene and different cannulas or different needles actually. And so, you know, how am I going to get it? Which of these is going to be the right size to actually thread it in there? And so at that time, a 27 gauge needle required you to really cut the 5-O-Prolene at a bevel in order for it to easily slide up there. So I practiced that in the OR before even starting with those two patients so that I knew that I wasn't going to get, like, get in there and then go, oh my goodness, I can't get this, right, you know, this suture to thread up there. So it was a little bit of, you know, trial and error ahead of time, remembering. Sometimes we go to like those complex cataract surgery seminars and somebody's got a little trick, or maybe you were browsing through, you know, the videos of a meeting and there's some little thing, right? And you're like, what a cool little trick. I need to remember that trick. I might not need it right away, but someday it's going to be that case that I need it. Like another one I had seen one time was using an iris hook to hook onto a haptic of a dislocated lens just to support it while you're trying to do other things. And I actually haven't used that particular one yet, but it's in there if I need it, you know? So it was that kind of thing. And it actually worked out really great with those two patients. And that's kind of been my go-to for dislocated IOLs ever since, in the bag dislocations in particular.
Oh, this is going to be in my memory bank. I'm ready for this.
And just what you said about that, you have to cut, you got to cut the 5-0 on a bevel.
Yes.
Right? I mean, just that alone. And the fact that you practice before you went in the eye, you didn't just watch a video, come up with an idea and say, I'm just going to try this on a person. You actually practiced outside of the eye. And I think that's key because then you have the confidence once you get into surgery. Amazing. So
I think the other thing too, though, is involve your staff. Like my whole, you know, the OR, all the OR staff, all, you know, my scrub techs are all kind of looking at it, thinking about it with me, trying to innovate with me. And, you know, many hands make light work and many different perspectives help you to kind of think it through together. So I think the other thing is get your whole team on board too.
I love it. Well, I can't wait to watch the videos and see this actual technique itself. But before we get to that, Kathy, Nicole, do you know what time it is?
I think it's sponsor time.
Sponsor time.
Sponsor time. We need a jingle.
I know. So this sponsor that we will reveal in just a moment is a supplement company that is going to help with dry eye. And I just want to bring it back to tell you how frustrated I can be with my dry eye experience and how I have tried many nutraceuticals. I have no idea what I'm doing. I read the articles. Half of them say they work. Half of them say they don't. And all I know is that when I take fish oil, it's a real uncomfortable feeling. So Liz, do you want to tell us who the sponsor is today?
The sponsor is Science-Based Health, or SBH, and I reached out to them to consider sponsoring this episode because I really believe in HydroEye. I think that HydroEye itself, I use it for all of my dry eye patients, and it's just a really good foundation because it's going to be an anti-inflammatory. It also helps with the lipids. So for me, I feel like I have a better lipid layer in the tear film, and this is totally anecdotal from utilizing HydroEye. But HydroEye is a patented, clinically tested supplement, and it's designed to relieve dry eyes from the inside out and to really support that healthy, more comfortable ocular surface. And that's going to be before surgery, after surgery, without surgery. It is different than just an omega-3 or other supplements. It is a formula that delivers GLA, and that's truly the dry eye omega, and it's a careful balance of other key nutrients that together do show to relieve dry eye symptoms, really suppress inflammation, and maintain a corneal smoothness in a randomized clinical trial. Above all, patients love it. It works roughly in 85% of patients. There's no smell, no taste. There's not that uncomfortable belch that someone may have just mentioned.
It's just wrong. But Liz, I was on the phone with you when you were picking lenses and talking to your staff. Mm-hmm. And I heard you preparing a patient for LASIK.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You said, okay, so I want them to do this, that, HydroEye for 2 weeks before we start evaluating the surface again. So yeah. Tell me about that.
Oh, well, it works, especially if you have good glands and you have a decent level of tear production, but you are trying to help boost them because you can tell that there is some corneal staining. I mean, there has been a study by Flugfelder that even shows, and you know, Flugfelder, he's my heart, but Steve Flugfelder shows that it actually helps in conjunctival cytology to improve goblet cells. So it really does. It increases goblet cells and it also helps improve function. So I'm a believer, anything that you can do to more normalize the actual tear film complex, that can't be a bad thing. So learn more. It's sbh.com/quicksand. And right. I actually want to ask Kathy, as her, in like her own experience, in her own words.
Yeah, I was just going to jump in anyway. Oh. I'm so eager to tell you. Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you asked. So because, you know, I have dry eye, and usually when I'm talking to my dry eye patients, I talk to them and say, you know what, I have dry eye. I know how, you know, frustrating it is. And it's kind of like one of those things you don't want to have to deal with. And we talk about different ways of dealing with that. And I love HydroEye is one part of the regimen that I ask them to perform. And I tell them, you know, here's what will happen, because everybody wants to know, you know, we can't really cure dry eye, right? So we find what works best to maintain the ocular surface for the patient. And I tell them, here's what's going to happen. You're going to go home because you're really uncomfortable right now, and you're going to do everything I say. And then things are going to get better because HydroEye really works and it helps the ocular surface. And then you're going to start feeling good. And so 2 months, 3 months go by and you're feeling really good. And then you're going to start getting lazy if you're anything like I am. And you're going to start forgetting to take your supplements. And you'll come back in a few months after that and you'll say, everything's awful, just like before. And I'm going to say, well, are you still taking your supplements? And you're going to say no. And I'm going to say, then why do you think it feels bad? So, and I tell them this actually when I start the medication, because I want them to understand that they have this responsibility to keep up with it. And if they start feeling that they're in that cycle, they can actually stop the cycle by taking their supplements again. So yeah, for me, it's super effective and it makes it easy for me to talk to patients about it. And I think that's really what it all comes down to. What would you do for yourself or your family?
Oh, that was beautiful.
That's great.
Kathy, that was awesome. Thank you so much for telling us about your experience with Hydra-I. But it is time for us to get back to the video and to the main show. So please set up the video for us about your new innovative technique, please.
Yes. So I am going to show you two cases actually that were just recently in the last couple of months. And actually I had another patient today that has the same situation. They're a patient who has a functioning trab and an in the bag dislocation. And so you can see that this is a dislocated IOL. It's in the bag. It's dislocated inferiorly. And really right about the visual axis, you see the optic haptic junction. So this patient is not seeing well at all. They have a very ischemic, elevated, but functioning bleb superiorly. And, you know, this is a patient that if I want to keep that conjunctiva as pristine as possible, and I'm most worried about failure of the bleb. And since she has really good IOP control, I really don't want to mess with that at all. So my options would be take out the whole IOL bag complex. Kind of needs a bigger, intervention then, because you're certain to get vitreous and you'll want to do an anterovitrectomy and then fixate a new lens in some other way. So if I can just leave this lens bag complex in there and avoid vitreous and avoid the conjunctiva, I think I've done the best job in preserving this functioning bleb. So this to me is a perfect case where that belt loop technique actually really is beneficial. And I'm not really sure what the next best option is. But what would you guys do if not this new little technique in this case?
So a couple of things. I love that you are also being really strategic about where the actual position of the haptic optic junction is in relation to what you're considering to do, because this patient anatomically has a huge area that we do not want to get near. So technically, if we're going to try to lasso this and save this, there's very limited real estate that we can utilize, because for those of you who can't see this, this bleb is basically taking up from maybe 10:30 all the way to 1 o'clock in terms of space. And the IOL is definitely, it's aligned, with the rule, basically 12 and 6. So there's a little area that you can kind of capture at that haptic optic junction and utilize some form of a lasso technique. But, we don't want to take down the conjunctiva. So, man, I can't wait to see this idea of what you are doing in order to preserve conjunctiva and take care of this patient.
So, yeah. So this is actually 6-O-proline. So one of the things I've modified with time is I like to use 6-O-proline and that thin-walled 30-gauge TSK needle. And right now I'm just kind of shaking it a little to just show you very dramatically how really loose that IOL bag complex is. And I'm marking 180 degrees away, knowing I'm going to have to rotate this lens a little bit in order to get the kind of purchase that I want and the location I want away from the bleb. So here's the first thing I want to show you, that, having the right instruments is really critical. So this was the first challenge with this case. I thought I had a great, 26 gauge, nice little grasper there, and I would be able to get the edge of the intercapsule, but no go, it wouldn't fit there. So this is a little spatulated cannula. We call this a macabula, by the way, in my practice. And it lies right underneath that intercapsular leaflet and allows me to put some dispersive viscoelastic, so viscoat in this case, in that space, kind of elevate it, make it easier to grab. But here's what happens sometimes with these really fine instruments. It's a serrated grasper or forceps, and it's just not meeting well enough at the tip for it to grab it. So I'm like, okay, no sweat. I've got lots of fun tools. Here's another one. that I like. That's some, it's a more little round fenestrated ends, really flat and kind of thin. And I thought, well, maybe I can grab it with that. No go, still won't fit there. So this is a disposable 25 gauge ILM peeling forceps that I finally, we were able to find something, you know, fine enough at the tip with a good enough grip that I can actually grasp that edge of the intercapsular leaflet. So, you know, having the right tools or at least a wide variety of tools is key when you're doing some of these complex cases.
So and we should stop right there for 1 second.
Let's stop. Okay.
So let me just tell you, retina doctors have all the fun, and you're so right. That same idea of using some disposable retina forceps, because the grasper on it, like the hand grip, is 360, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like whatever position that your hand is comfortable, it's not, you're not having to force yourself to hold it a certain way in order to get the actual grasper to meet. I've used it and it saved me in a pinch when I'm doing EK surgery. This is a fantastic example, but show us what you're doing on the other end. You've got with your one hand a hold of the actual capsule, and in the other you've got...
So I have that 30 gauge TSK needle that I've now bent about 90 degrees at the hub with the bevel facing up. So I've bent that needle so that I can introduce it through conjunctiva and sclera 2 millimeters posterior to the limbus. And so I'm really, you know, first I want to make sure the first trick is really when you bend the needle, make sure that you're bending it in a way when you hold it, the bevel's going to be facing in the way that's easiest to load the suture. So you don't want to get in there and the bevel's kind of tilted away and just makes what's already the trickiest part of the procedure even harder. So make sure you're bending it in the way that you're going to comfortably hold it and enter it into the eye. I'm passing it through conjunctiva and sclera and then through the capsular bag underneath the haptic. So, and I'm doing that by holding this intraocular forceps on, at least with a very good purchase of the edge of the anterior capsule.
So, Kathy, can I interrupt you for 1 second?
Yes.
The forceps that you're using are Grasshopper made by Alcon, and they're max grip. They're 25 gauge max grip. So anytime you do these cases, you want them sitting on the shelf in the room so someone's ready to open them. The second thing is you know, sometimes when I'm doing these cases, I want to stabilize this IOL. So you can put in a safety basket suture so that it's always sitting there and not floating around. But I think Ike Ahmed has shown us also, you can put a little iris hook and hook that capsule and keep it stable. But when you do that, sometimes, you know, those capsules aren't polished. I mean, the hooks aren't polished, and so it can rip. So holding it the way you're holding it is really good as long as that capsule is fibrosed. Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Nicole, I might love you just a little more.
I'm just saying.
No, it's not the basket. The fact that you knew that the name of it is called a max grip.
What? You got to know what you need.
That's why you're so good. You're basically a retina surgeon hiding as an anterior segment surgeon.
I wish. Oh. But the last thing, sorry, is that you are at the optic haptic junction.
Yes.
I think is
beautiful.
Tell us why that's important.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. You know, one of the things I think is important for this technique is actually doing it when you're going through capsular bag, because especially with a three-piece lens, which I've done this with a, you know, great number of three-piece lenses as well, is that you don't want it to slide off. And so if you're going through the capsular bag, you have lots of stuff that's keeping it from going laterally, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, and if you're at the optic haptic junction, you've got a big long haptic before it slides off the end as well.
Right.
So I just want to give it the most chance of staying stable like forever for this patient. And I think that's the best place to do it.
Great. Gotcha. So you use counter traction, and then the 30 gauge needle is coming from posterior to the haptic, and then it's coming through the capsule here.
Yes.
In between the space of the haptic optic junction, essentially.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Under the haptic and in front of the optic. So yeah, so this is, and I like to pass that one first because then you're actually holding up the lens. So
right.
That's like when you breathe that sigh of relief, when you haven't put in the nice basket that Nicole is telling us, so that your sigh of relief can happen long before this.
Exactly.
So, which I think that's a great idea. And that is one that I need to start implementing more because my heart actually will probably appreciate it.
It does. And if you're trying to relocate a multifocal or lasso a multifocal or a toric, putting it where you want it is critical. So
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so when I did for this particular side, I could see that optic haptic junction, and it was not that difficult to kind of rotate it slightly. So mm-hmm. I was staying away from the bleb, and you'll see it's a little more difficult on the other side. But so here we are, I've passed it underneath the haptic through the capsular bag. And the next step is to take that 6-O proline, also cut at a bevel. It's a little bit less important to be at a really great bevel with 6-O proline and this TSK needle than it is with the 5-O proline and the 27 gauge needle. But I always test this outside of the eye mm-hmm. before I go in the eye, because this is not the time I want to find out it won't thread in there. You know, I've already done all this hard work, grabbing the lens, everything else. And now if I found out I had to use something different, that would be so sad. So once it's threaded in there, and what I do, I'm going to stop here for just a second, because the other trick, and you'll see why I say this in a moment, but I just keep threading that up there until it won't thread anymore. And then it's really kind of hit the bend in the needle at that point, because it's so sad when you pull it out and there's no suture
there.
Like really? That's like sad.
The worst.
Sad.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And yes. It's like, you're holding your breath. You're like, oh, is it there? Is it not? Is it there?
So I'm going to have y'all hold your breath with me in a minute, but it was there, it was fine. And as you pull it out, you know, usually I see, oh my gosh, I put a lot more in there than I thought I did, but that's just because I don't want to have that feeling as I pull it out. And so once I've done that, which I've now already in the video here, pulled it out, and you see the suture coming through the inter chamber, underneath the haptic, and then up through sclera and conjunctiva and out through the conjunctiva.
And how far back are you? 1.5 or?
Two millimeters, okay. Yeah, generally. Because my second one is going to be 1.5.
Got it.
So it's going to be a half millimeter in front. And what I really do is mark, you know, 2 millimeters and go just right
behind it.
Like right where it is, tight, slightly behind it, mm-hmm. and then a little bit in front of the mark.
Right.
Just so that we have a little separation there. And right now what I'm doing is actually filling the sulcus with viscoelastic, making a nice space there, because I need the space to now go in front of the haptic and the bag complex.
So can you stop the video here?
Yep.
Sometimes when I've done different lasso techniques, whether you're making a sclerotomy or going in with a needle, if you're too planar, sometimes you end up like in front of the iris what I started doing is pointing towards the optic nerve and then flattening out. Do you do the same thing with this technique?
Absolutely, because I've definitely done that before. And that's another place that you're not happy, because you're like, where's my needle? And then you look and it's actually like in the iris or in front of the iris even.
Right.
So no fun there either. So we want to avoid that, which is why I inflated anterior to this. So it's actually pushing back pretty far. So I have a nice amount of space to be a little bit posterior and then level out.
Right.
So
but that, there's no that chance first move is like down and then flatten, right?
Yep. Yep. Which is why I kind of pushed it back a little bit right there. And I can, because now we have something holding it up, right? So I'm not so worried about pushing it way back there. I know I can get it back up again just by pulling on my suture.
The second suture is so much easier in lasso technique because you're going into the sulcus and basically trying not to bleed. Right. Because I do hold my breath doing that, because when you are within the 2 millimeters, you have a greater chance of bleeding. Nicole Fram, I don't know if you've ever heard of her, incredible surgeon. She actually taught me that if you go behind 2.5, so like 2.75 millimeters into the sulcus space, the chance of vitreous hemorrhage, whenever you're doing kind of a scleral fixation, not necessarily lasso, chance of vitreous hemorrhage goes down, way down. And it's so true. It is so true. And that's a great pearl. Not necessarily that that's always possible. Like in this technique, if you're going to go in the same kind of the same meridian, you're going to have to go within the 2.5 millimeter space.
Right.
So again, I'm just threading it in there. This again is always the harder part. And all of these, this part here, you know, every part that you're talking about, right? When you pass it in, making sure you're not going through the iris or anything, you are holding your breath. And especially now, it just seems like, you know, mask, because I'm wearing an N95 and it actually fogs up my oculars more than, you know, before. And I'm holding my breath a lot. And, you know, a lot of this holding your breath, after a while, you're sort of like, I need oxygen, right?
There's no bleeding, guys, by the way. This looks beautiful.
So now I'm just kind of pulling it forward, you know, pulling it a little bit tighter so that it's really, I can see that it's lassoed around. Because, you know, sometimes you're not in the space you think you are. And you pull it and you're like, wait a minute, my lens didn't move. So I'm clearly not around the haptic. And I'm leaving these long and I'm melting the end right there, as you saw. And I'm going to go ahead and just stop for a second. But I melted the end and left it long just as a safety. For right now, it's okay. It can move a little bit. Maybe it's going to move a little bit and I don't want to tear anything because there's a lot of play in it right now. But I'd also don't want to just leave those sutures long with no flange on them, because, you know, sometimes you pull that accidentally and no way do I want to have to do this again. So it's sort of a safety flange at this point on that side. And now I'm going to look at the other side. And this is the side where you can see this is a little bit more dislocated inferiorly. So finding the optic-haptic junction is going to be a little harder. I'm going to have to rotate the lens a little bit to find it, right?
What about putting hooks in?
Right. The pupil's not very big.
Brilliant idea that you have that would have made it so much easier.
She's got a 5 millimeter pupil on this patient. So there's really no visualization, everyone, of the haptic optic junction inferiorly, as the lens is also dislocated inferiorly.
True that, all of it. What a great idea for next time. So what I'm doing is taking, and I'm got my nifty Max Grip.
Max Grip.
Thank you, Alcon.
Yes. We're losing a little bit of the view a little, because of course I'm not so concerned about what I'm filming here as getting this done. But as I move it over so that I can visualize that optic-haptic junction, is kind of this totally two-handed technique, right? And then once I get the needle placed where I want it to be, I can then let go of the lens and thread my second piece of 6-O-proline into this needle. And now I'm going to just show you, because nobody likes to see this, right? But I have a little tremor now because this is tough stuff. And I'm also not breathing.
Stop the video. The video stopped. Okay. This is your quicksand, right? So this is the moment, and I go through this every week, where you're like, okay, I cannot give up on this eyeball, right?
Yes.
So what are you doing? What are you calling for? What are you telling yourself? Are you like, why did I even invent this technique?
Yes. No, you know what I do right here? The first thing I do is I sit back for a second and I take a deep breath. I take a breath because I'm a little frustrated, number one. So it's a little sigh breath, but also just to kind of go, okay, it's okay. You know what to do. You can do this. You just need to do it again, as much as I don't want to do it again.
And one pearl for anyone who's not watching and just listening. There is nothing more difficult, I think, when we're doing scleral fixation techniques than trying to actually fixate temporally. And that's what Dr. McCabe and the McCabinator is trying to do. Because, okay, once, as you can imagine, you have to somehow feed the suture into the eye and then throw the suture to yourself as you're trying to pull that suture out. It's not the easiest technique. So there is a little bit of more acrobatics, and the angulation is not as easy as if you were kind of pushing the suture towards the nasal area and pulling out. So it does make it more challenging. Just food for thought. It is way easier to do every other hour of the eye than to throw towards yourself when you're working temporally. Would you not agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is kind of the worst, you know, angle. You know, luckily this patient isn't super deep set, because right. that's the other time.
That's the worst.
Oh.
Or like a big schnoz.
Yes.
Nasally.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say an Asian eye. That's so funny. You went for that and I went for the Asian eye.
I love Asian eyes. Everything's flat Wait, and where it
gonna,
should be.
We're going to stop right there. Go ahead.
All right. So we're going to keep going because, yeah, frustration. But getting myself back together again. And now I'm just doing the same thing, making sure I can visualize that I'm in the right space again. And I'm going to thread it through again. And this time I'm going to be really sure that I've threaded it all the way up there. But I'm kind of frustrated. You can see here even. I'm frustrated. I've done this already. I don't want to do it again. And but I'm going to keep threading. And I don't think I make you go through this again, but I'm going to tell you, I pulled it out twice with no suture.
So do patients, do you tell your patients when you're trying a new technique?
Yes. So like the first two I told you about, that the Tecnis Multifocal and the Restore, mm-hmm. I absolutely told them I think this is going to be a great technique. It's going to let me do something really important for you in a safer way, but I've never done it before. But I've done similar things. So yeah. And they were super pumped and excited, both of them, and really excited that they got to keep their lens. So I'm going to stop because we kind of like went a little bit past here, but in the end, I did actually thread it the appropriate amount. It came out 2 millimeters posterior, and then I put the 0.5 millimeter just in front of that second needle into the sulcus in front of the haptic and bag complex, and completed the loop that way, pulled them both successfully out of sclera and conjunctiva, and made that safety flange. And now I'm directing my attention back to the first ones. And I'm going to say this is probably the part where there's two little tips that help with this technique. And one is just be patient about taking the slack up. So, you know, it's going to feel like, if you've done other suture techniques too, especially, it will start to feel like, oh, that's got to be pretty tight, because it's kind of easy to thread, you know, 9-O-proline, if that's what you're used to, or even Gore-Tex in a way that kind of doesn't have a lot of resistance as you're tightening it up. So the fact that you have a little bit of resistance, because this is a bigger suture, feels like you've done the job when you really haven't. So the first few ones of these I did, I would think I did it. I trim off my flange. And then I kind of look at it and go, the lens looks like it's sitting a little bit further back. I wonder why. And then maybe I haven't tightened it as much as I think I have. And I would very gently start pulling it out of the conjunctiva again, and realized there was quite a bit that I could have actually, you know, slack that I could take out, and it would put the lens in the right plane. So if it doesn't look like it's in the right plane, see if you have a little bit of extra laxity and you haven't quite gotten all the extra tension or gotten the appropriate tension in the suture.
I will say that's where I have the most difficulty with this technique, because I've done it for like 6 clock hours of ureter dialysis, and it's fantastic for that too. Because once it is kind of seated, it is tough to try to pick it up, get under it to grasp it so that you can recauterize it, especially mm-hmm. when it's almost tight enough, but not exactly tight. And I wonder if the max grip would be helpful in that scenario to kind of hold on to it if you need to, because, you know, you're right. You just have to be patient with it. But this is a beautiful. So if it were a 27 gauge needle and 5-O-proline, are you concerned about the tunnel that the 27 gauge created at all? Or is the 5-O large enough of a width to be able to do this kind of intrascleral fixation?
Yeah, so I think the 5-O really takes up the tunnel well. So one thing I haven't seen that would make me worry about that is some hypotony in the early postoperative period. So I haven't seen that, or any like bleb formation around the flange,
right?
Because that would worry me. Now, the one thing I did initially that I don't recommend anymore is I made the flange bigger because I was a little worried about that. But you don't need a large flange. And in fact, I think a very small flange is actually better because it's easier to bury it a little bit in the sclera.
Totally.
So I make a pretty tiny, I think this is, you know, a pretty small flange. And then I really work to make sure that it's kind of in the sclera a little bit, and certainly very flat when you're running something over it. And the other thing I do is when I get the tension, I think, right, I'll grasp it. And I think even the Max grip are better for that. It seems like that should be a sponsor for sure.
I know. I'm so sorry. It's just the fact that Nicole knew that.
I know.
The Framinator knew that. Oh, amazing. Amazing.
But what I do is I grasp as tightly as I can, kind of indenting into the sclera a little bit to grasp so that when I make the flange and release it, there's that extra little bit of it, you know, going in rather than having a little extra laxity from where I grabbed it.
That's huge. So there's nothing worse than post-op. Like everything looks perfect. The lens isn't moving. And then you like look for the position of these and you see it like popping up a little. I'm like,
Yep. And you know, after a couple, when I'd done a few of them, what I did is I actually started cutting, you know, actually doing a tiny peritomy there, which I wouldn't want to do in this case for sure. And just sort of, absolutely getting that flange underneath a few fibers of the sclera so that I was absolutely certain it wasn't going to pop up. But now with these smaller flange with a 6-0-proline, that's really not been an issue at all. But it's important to keep it in mind.
Is that flange under the conge?
Not yet. Okay. It's just sort of sitting there because I haven't done the other side yet.
Okay.
And the other side, you know, once you do that side, sometimes you want to go, at least I do, you know, one of those totally OCD people that all go a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit back and forth.
Because when I tie with Gore-Tex, I'm tying one side and then the other for the titration. So I'm wondering, I haven't done this yet. I'm going to do it next week. You know, if you have the right tension on each side, you can tie one side, then the other.
Mm-hmm. I just like to keep going back and forth a little bit. So I haven't done, I think it's okay. So that's why I let it be right at the surface, but I haven't actually done the last poking of it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Because I've done that before and had to, you know, get underneath the conjunctiva to find it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm kind of looking, I mean, now I'm poking it in there further, right? And making sure, because now I'm pretty happy with it. I think everything looks good. I want to make sure, I can't even hardly see those blue buttons anymore because they're kind of underneath the sclera a little bit. Going to do the rest of, you know, making sure I've taken the viscoelastic out. Looks pretty good.
So that's great. Sometimes I'll put a little bit of preservative-free triamcinolone at the end because sometimes even though you think you preserved the hyaloid face with all the dispersive viscoelastic, you get a little bit. So that's the only thing I would add there. That's just beautiful. I cannot wait to try this technique. How brave do you have to be to, number one, innovate and then tell your patient, hey, this is the first time I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked, I think last time we saw you, that vulnerability is being brave and afraid at the same time. So I imagine, you know, that was part of this.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it helped in those first two cases too, because the patients were so motivated to keep their premium lenses. So they were kind of like, look, doc, if you can keep my lens, that's great.
Right.
And of course I told them that's plan A and I always have plan B and plan C. So I don't know what we're going to do. Hopefully, if we're lucky, this is going to work out just the way I imagine it in my dreams. And but if it doesn't, we're going to do what I would have done anyway without this technique. And you're going to be fine. It's just going to be a bigger surgery than hopefully this neat little thing that I think is going to work for you.
But what's really surprising is like if you were to look at a lens like what you just did in scleral fixated and you compare it to like an iris fixated lens without capsule behind it, that scleral fixated technique that you just did using the proline suture, that lens will not move or shake. There will be no pseudophagodynesis post-op. It's amazing. Whereas you can see an IOL shimmer and shake when you iris fixate it, which might be in some surgeons may say, oh, it's easier to just iris fixate. No, but there's still denesis and there's still concern that it's going to dislocate. I really feel confident in what you did that lens will not redislocate.
So another thing I've done to make myself feel very confident about it, number one, I always shake it at the end because that I have my little video and everybody kind of likes it in the OR as well. And it makes me feel like, yeah, that's absolutely steady and not going anywhere. But I've also taken that 6-0-proline. I don't know if you guys have done this. And I've bent it and turned it like around a cannula and tried to kink it enough that some, you know, can this break? And what if I'm kind of rough? And how much can I, you know, have an angle of the belt loop before it really compromises it? And it's tough. Like you can just do about anything to it. And it's tough. Now I try to treat it as gently as possible when I'm using it for a reel, but go ahead and do that. And you'll sort of show yourself just how tough that suture is.
Right. And 6.0, 5.0, much thicker than 9.0, 10.0 proline, mm-hmm. which we know can disintegrate, you know, over 5-20 years.
Well, I want to show you this other case. You know, it's pretty dislocated still. This is like moving all around and the patient doesn't have good vision, and they are actually getting some inflammation in the eye from how it's rubbing up against the iris, but same, almost identical looking bleb, right? Mm-hmm. And you can see it's pretty wiggly there, right? And, but I'm going to do the same technique. And this is a patient, and I'm going to stop here for just a second to tell you about her, because she has a toric IOL in, and she had monovision. Her left eye has a toric and she's seeing great at distance. And this is her near eye. And she, again, wants to keep her independent vision from glasses. She wants to keep her toric if she can. And, you know, I want to preserve as much conjunctiva and this functioning bleb without disturbing anything if I can help it. So kind of a win-win. I know what the axis is that she had her toric in before. And if I can match that up and kind of keep it really stable and the least invasive possible, I feel like it's a win. So that's the plan for this patient.
So where were you marking it? Looks against the rule over here, and the patient has a superior bleb.
Yep. So this patient's original axis was, I think it was at 1 or 2 degrees. So pretty much horizontal. And yeah, the bleb's superior. So we're lucky, right? Because if it was a toric and it was 90 degrees to that, you know, sorry. We would do LRIs maybe or something, you know, or maybe, you know, some other, we could have PRK or something in the future if you're absolutely dedicated to this, but we don't have to do that here. So yay. So same sort of thing. This time I don't want to have to re-thread my needle so many times. So hopefully that's not going to be an issue. Here I'm showing bending that TSK needle, placing it through conjunctiva and sclera again, 2 millimeters posterior to limbus. And as you were saying, Nicole, you see how that angle was so much posterior to begin with as I went in, and then I flattened it out. Now, this is the first pass, so it's going underneath the haptic, right at the optic-haptic junction again, through the capsular bag.
You're using that second instrument to help push it through.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And then the fun part, threading it, holding my breath. And there it is. Yay. It came through the conjunctiva.
So do you pearl? Go ahead.
I was just saying, like, I'm sorry. I just was wondering, do you feel a hard stop?
Yes.
In the cannula? So you can actually have a tactile sensation to know when you're done.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And so you really do want to do that. You want to keep it going. If you just push it in till it stops, it's at that bend, mm-hmm. the 90 degree bend, and it's not going anywhere because it's the whole length of the needle. So, you know, you can do that. Just sit there and be a little patient, and then you won't have that heart-stopping moment when you pull the needle out and there's no suture.
The one other thing that I do beyond that is, you know, as you, so you've got the suture in, it's kind of a two-handed technique, like, but as I'm pulling, I'm pushing. Right. So I don't take my force, I don't take my max grip out. I keep the max gripper on the suture, but I'm like kind of slowly feeding it. So I'm doing a push pull at the same time, right. Because right. I've lost it way. I mean, there have been times where I've lost it like 3 or 4 times. I mean, 2 is nothing. I mean, that, like superstar surgeons, 2. Liz, you, we're not going to go there.
As long as it's not double digits, we're all good, right? Right. So again, I'm doing my safety flange, you know, really long flange there, just in case something catches on it. I don't want it to pull it through. Making more space, pushing that whole IOL back so that I can have that proper orientation as I go first, a little more posterior and then flatten out so I'm not in the iris, which was such a great point to point out there. And same sort of thing. I'm going to get it right in front of the bag and haptic. Grab that other end of the same piece of 6.0 proline, in the anterior chamber and thread it and keep on threading it until it stops, which I didn't make you watch that whole thing. But then this is kind of an interesting little thing that happened with this case. So I'm pulling, and you can see there's kind of a, like a backwards loop there, right? It folded over on itself. So I'm going to do the other side. I didn't really address that at that moment. Here I'm doing the same exact belt loop technique on the other, the temporal haptic. And unlike previously, now I'm able to get it out without losing it. Now I'm going to thread the second side, the other cut end of the same piece of 6-0 proline. And this is the pass that goes anterior to the capsular bag and the haptic, pulling both ends out and, you know, kind of looking, seeing what the orientation of the loop is as I gently withdraw that. I want to make sure it looks like it's centering the lens. The lens has moved inferiorly quite a bit. And I could see that it didn't center well, right? See, it's still inferior. And I started examining what was with that kind of funky loop that happened as I was withdrawing the first suture. And what happened is it had sort of folded over. And as soon as I just put a little bit back into the eye and released that, unfolded that fold, then everything centered very nicely. So if something's not looking quite right, kind of examine, where is the suture going? Did it get caught on the haptic? Is there some, you know, even little piece of retained cortex or something that's holding it and preventing it from doing the right thing? And right here, I'm taking some, it's actually Utrata's because they have a nice sharp point, and making sure I'm pushing that flange way into the sclera. And then there's that little jiggle I like to do at the end that says, look, that is just totally, totally stable and rock solid.
So Kathy, you know, this is just awesome. I'm not sure what you have against iris hooks, but we can talk about that later.
Might be an issue. I don't know.
It's really exciting because it's elegant. It spares conjunctiva, and you haven't had any long-term complications, and you've been doing this now for a few years with the flange sitting on the sclera, like a scleritis or anything like that. And so this long-term data is going to be really important. One of the things that's super frustrating is that some bags don't make fibrosis. It's like a dead bag, and Liliana Werner and a bunch of us are looking at our dead bags. When you lasso a dead bag and you have that kind of tension, have you had it split all the way out, or tell me about your experience with that?
Well, fortunately, I haven't had a case where it really looked like that dead bag. Mm-hmm. And so some of them actually, in contrast to the two cases we just saw, sometimes they actually have quite a bit of a sommering ring type of, you know.
Those are the best to lasso.
They are the best.
Yeah.
Another great pearl. You would think that the Elschnick pearls are, they make it more difficult. If they stay in that area and they don't start coming out of the bag and getting
and if it's symmetrical all the way around.
Exactly. Because when it's one-sided, sometimes it does get in the way. But it does provide like just a little bit of extra, I don't know, counter traction.
Substance.
So that when you do, it's much less of a dead bag. It actually acts like kind of a stabilizing architecture that you can suture through.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't mind seeing fibrosis there. That's a very good point. I think it's a great thing. It stops the suture from sliding one way or another. I guess another point along those lines is if you don't see a lot of fibrosis or that substance that's going to help hold it in place, be really, really careful not to cause a lot of tangential forces that can allow that suture to start to rip through the capsular bag along the trajectory of the haptic.
Yeah, I've stopped lassoing. If you have a dead bag, I've stopped lassoing. That lens is coming out and I'm starting over. Well, Kathy, so if you could give us like some takeaway points from this experience of innovating and quicksand and then more innovation, what would they be?
Okay, so when you have an idea, like if you see something, which we often see from Nicole, from Liz, from all of the other great surgeons out there that we're seeing how they like what worked through a difficult thing, and something starts to spark an idea, you know, first of all, write it down. I don't always remember those ideas later. You know, maybe I don't remember the basket because it's not at the top of my thought process at that moment. So write it down. Number one, if you find something super interesting. Yeah. And then if you have an idea, practice it ahead of time. Like take whatever you can. There's stimuli. There's all kinds of tools now that you can get to kind of work through the problem before you get into the OR with a patient so that you can really know that the geometry of what you're trying to do probably works or where it doesn't work. And then you can kind of think that through and problem solve ahead of time. Involve your staff. So everybody's sort of on the same page. And my staff oftentimes, like if you were in the room with me, Nicole, wouldn't you say, why are you not using an iris hook right there? You should be using an iris hook. It would make it easier. And my staff will sometimes do that. They'll be like, Dr. McKay, would you like another?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And a few other things too. I mean, you know, you won't always have access to like your complex cataract instrumentation, just things that you've shown already, right? There are great disposable instruments, the retina instruments, like we talked about. There are intraocular scissors, intraocular forceps that can serve its dual purpose for what we need it for, which is really helpful. So you don't have to go out and make this kind of capital investment, but at the same time, always make sure that you have the backup of everything that you're going to need in the room so that you have it if you need it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's true for like the plan A, but also plan B and plan C, and like list for each of those plans, what would be the tools. Yeah. What do you need? Yeah. So you have them. So.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. McCabe-Nader. We just really appreciate you and for being here. The second episode at that, your contributions, your volunteerism,
your courage, here,
your courage. What is it? Did you say vulnerability is bravery?
Brené Brown has this amazing TED talk, and she talks about vulnerability, and vulnerability is being brave and afraid at the same time.
Got it.
Love that.
Yeah.
She's
amazing. To live by. Yeah.
I know. Cause I'm like being brave and weak. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. No, that wasn't it. Well, have a great evening. Thank you guys all for listening. Thank you again to our sponsor, SBH. Please remember to watch and subscribe to this YouTube channel and to watch future episodes of this podcast. Of course, you can listen and subscribe to Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcast. Please remember, and we've really appreciated the email feedback. We will absolutely get to some intumescent lenses. We've had that as a request. We've had emails come to us from Myanmar. I mean, it is really encouraging and inspiring to see that we are able to help speak with through the education of surgeons like Dr. McCabe to those abroad. quicksandchronicles@ascrs.org. Provide those questions. Tell us what we're not doing well. Tell us what you want to see. We want to hear your feedback and comments. So thank you.
Honored to have been here with you ladies again. Thank you so much.
Just remember, we're here for you. And every time you think you have the eyeball figured out, it's going to humble you.
We hope these collective experiences help you develop grace under pressure. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Ophthalmology Quicksand Chronicles with Drs. Nicole Fram and Elizabeth Yu, where hindsight really is 2020.